And that, that, and yeah. I have learned that in the past few years, especially. Why does she keep going back to it? And she, you know, when you're in rehab, at least a couple of times she's done this where they have them write their life story. And she read it to me, and I mean, I knew some of this stuff, but I did not know the full story. I was shocked.
I'm sure.
And I began to understand.
There's
a lot of trauma there, of various kinds. And everybody's trauma is different. They handle it differently. My trauma may not, you may not think it's anything. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just everybody's different as to far as to how they handle it. But I was stunned.
And it's often anxiety, isn't it? That they're, that
it is.
They're
it
trying
is.
To, you know, anxiety and or depression that they're trying to overcome. So, especially in social situations, they're, they just can't, even, and you know, I'm in long-term recovery. As I look back on my, adolescence, I was a mess. I was so anxious in high school that I thought I was going to lose my mind at times. And I think when I found alcohol in the form of beer for me, I'm from Milwaukee, remember? Not just, I'm just teasing. Actually, funny story, but my godfather was an engineer for the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company. And then he moved over to Pabst, you know, PBR.
But my dad's favorite.
But I actually tell people here, and they believe me sometimes, I say, well, and being from Milwaukee, Sud's City, and he was my godfather, so I was baptized in beer. And so, and there are people here that say, oh, is that right? Okay.
Really?
But it's not. No, no, no. It's a, it is a, so guess what? We haven't even talked about what you do to cope, and you and I assume art is involved, and you, you've put together a presentation
As, and actually, as well. You know, to be honest, I'd kind of like to take it on the road. Because I've got a great group of friends back in Bend, and I mean, there is a reason why I moved there. I needed to be out of my kind of the comfort zone, which was North Dakota, and get into a space where I was kind of anonymous in a way to begin with. And I could meet people just from this, you know, not from my history, okay? I've got a history here. Everybody has a history from where they're from. And so I didn't have to drag all that with me. And this group of friends, I mean, we talk about everything, and we come from all kinds of different backgrounds. And they understand what I'm going through, and they've encouraged me to use my voice. Because when I was younger, I was very shy. I don't think I wrote.
Hard to believe.
I didn't raise my hand. I rarely rose my hand, you know, would raise my hand in class to ask questions or anything. I was very shy. At home, I was a terror because I was angry, angry a lot because I didn't like myself. And I was, too, was very anxious. I don't know how I dealt with it. I don't know how I ever got out of high school with everything intact, to be honest with you. But they encouraged me because they, so they, you know, I did bring in some of my history to them. And so they understood where I was coming from, that I needed to use my voice. And my voice has always been, since, you know, since college, since I finally figured out what I wanted to do, was art, you know, doing art, but not art that people necessarily recognize as something in particular. It's more from, it's more, well, some people would call it abstract, but it's my reality.
Yes.
It's what's in my subconscious. I've always painted and worked from my intuition. And not really plan things out. I just sort of I've learned to let things out. So I've always done that type of work, and you know, more recently, I have decided. And my titles, when I title my work, I always sit back and look at my work for a while and try to figure out, okay, what was it that? Because I don't really know what I was thinking. I'm not cognizant of it until I sit and look, and I then I get a feeling of what the title should be and what it was about. And my titles are very significant. And people, when they look at my work and they see my titles, they go, oh, yeah,
Oh, yeah. Give us an example. This is radio. We can't see your art, but I'm pretty familiar with your art. What are a couple of your titles?
Oh, dear. The one that I can think of right now is Luminous Exodus, and it's... You know, I think it's on the image of the business card that I gave you.
Okay.
It's a painting of a figure that's sort of flying away, like releasing themselves, moving them beyond where they have come from, you know. So it's luminous, it's bold, it's moving forward, it's an exodus, you know. And so I write in my sketchbook, I write a bunch of names down. And then eventually it'll come up, you know, intuitively. I know that's the title. Mm-hmm. So once I thought about my work and then the title, and then writing came into play, because I've always journaled, but I started writing more about the work afterwards. Well, sometimes during, you know, like what was I thinking?
Right.
And then I started this blog this summer. I wasn't necessarily intending to send it out there. But I just started writing, and I think subconsciously I knew eventually I would send it out, because that was the next step.
Okay.
Art, titles, blog that anybody can read, you know, because sometimes when they look at my work, people don't get it, you know, and that's okay. That's all right. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, maybe words, putting words to what it is that I do.
Sure. Before we forget, what's your website?
Oh, it's my name. It's michellelindblom.com. Okay. Very, very simple.
And I suppose we should spell it LINDBLOM.
Just one O.
Some people like to put the two O's
in
there.
Right, they do.
Yeah, but okay.
And Michelle with two L's.
Can we find your blog?
You can find the blog right there. It's up in the top menu.
Very good.
So you can read it. So this first blog that I sent out was the one about when Mackenzie revealed to us that she had been self-medicating. And that was a hard one to write. Where that started was a writing class that I took a couple of years ago. The instructor wanted us to write something that we would put in essay form that we would like to publish. And I thought, well, okay, let's do this. So I started writing it 2 years ago, actually.
Yeah.
And then I kept crafting it and kept crafting it. And then eventually it was good enough for me to send it out there. So once I sent that out there, the response, it's not like I got a lot of comments within my blog, but in other avenues I would get comments. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I read your blog.
I'm looking forward to reading that. How many words did it turn out to be?
I think it was 700. Mm. You know, I try not to make it too long, because I know people's attention span is pretty
nowadays,
limited.
Yeah.
And my own, you know, too. And you have to edit it so it's compelling enough to keep them reading. And I've made changes in my blogs as I've gone on. You know, I've broken them up, you know, so they're even more readable. But that first one set things up, because it set it up to the point where, okay, maybe this is my purpose. Yes, I like doing work, you know, maybe selling it, but selling and marketing my work is not my purpose. I think my purpose is to use my art and my words as a voice for others to connect.
Sure. So you mentioned earlier you'd like to take this on the road.
Yeah.
So what is this?
This is just my voice as a parent and an artist and how I deal with recovery as my daughter deals with recovery. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's not the same thing. I'm the parent, you know.
Yes.
But
yes.
Just my view and how I work through it, and that there are ways to work through it. Because I'm a part of a few different Facebook groups of mothers of addicted children or spouses or whatever, and their stories are horrendous, and you know, but they share and then they get comments. All that connection is so important.
Yeah. So I'm assuming you're painting about this.
Well, the painting comes first. The painting comes first.
All right.
And
so you are painting this crisis in so many
because it's part of my life. It's part of my life, and I paint what is part of my life.
Sure. Yeah.
So there's other things I paint about too. It's not just, but essentially.
Yeah. So when you set out to do a painting, if that's the right terminology. Mm-hmm. How do you start out? How does it begin?
Yeah, I had somebody asked me that this morning.
Right. Process.
Yeah. The process is the most important thing. It's not the end product. And I always told my students that too. Because that's where you learn things about yourself and about your craft. Sometimes I start with a previously done painting that I don't care for anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I will cover it up. Mm-hmm. And if it's a blank canvas, which is always terrifying for any artist, is a blank canvas. Sure. What am I going to do with this?
Yep.
I start out with either colors that are left over from a previous painting, because I don't like to waste anything. I like to use all my paint. Yep. I'm very frugal in that mm-hmm. way. Or I pick out colors that I kind of feel that day.
You know? Right.
But I do not have any preconceived ideas mm-hmm. about what I'm going to do. So mm-hmm. it just kind of starts with those colors. And it mainly starts with, you know, large movements. Sure. Across the canvas.
Do you use
brushes? Palette
knives.
I use palette knives. Yep. I use my hands. I use a squirt bottle. I use all kinds of different tools.
I guess I've never seen you paint.
Right.
I've seen your studio downtown and everything, but I've never physically seen you paint. So.
Yeah. Well, I used to do paintings on stage for Arts Quest up at BSC.
Okay. Sure.
You know, the Arts Quest event that they have.
Do you think that would be part of what you would take on the road?
Maybe.
To do a
Maybe. Yeah. You never know. Never know. So that's kind of where it starts, just with color, and then just a few. And I just, you sort of get into a zone. I mean, you do get into a zone. That's what I do. I get into a zone. Either music is playing, or I have my door open to the to the river and nature. But I focus on, and sometimes that'll only last for 5 minutes.
Sure.
And then I stand back and I go, oh, no.
Now
what do I do?
Yeah.
And then I have to step aside, or sometimes I just attack it even more. So I don't think about it. I try to get my head out of it.
What's your music choice? I just have to ask that question.
I have lots of music choices, but I still am a classic rock girl.
Okay.
You know, so, 70s, 60s.
All right.
You know.
Such as?
Well, you know.
AC/DC or something?
Well, I'm not a huge AC/DC fan, but so it's not the headbanging stuff. Well, they're not really headbanging, but sometimes I'll listen to yoga type music, meditation type music.
Yes.
It depends on the mood that I'm in. Sometimes it's classical, but not too often lately. Mm. I used to listen to classical a lot, but I'm not feeling that in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
It's more like comfort music, I think. And that's why classic rock is...
I understand.
Comfort music for me.
No, I understand.
My era.
So, again, you're on Recovery Chronicles. So, how does this activity help you, not sure what word to use, but help you live with this crisis, or even if that's the right word, let's call it live with this worry,
it's just kind of a daily,
the unpredictability.
You know, I've always been a very flexible person because I've lived in different situations and I've been able to adapt. I can adapt to just about anything, and that's maybe how I dealt with how I was when I was younger, you know, my anxieties. I just adapted. And so I adapt to the situation. You know, if there's a certain thing that's happening on a day, like Mackenzie relapsed, and, you know, I take care of it as best as I can from a distance. You know, I can only do so much.
Right.
And she's really got to do, and she's learned. She's learned the resources. She's learned what she needs to do.
Yes.
But if it's just general stuff, you know, I just go about my day. I do what I need to do for me. I've learned how to be my own best friend.
Yeah.
And I think my husband's done that too. He's, you know, this is tough on him too.
You only have so much control.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I have learned that I am a control freak. I always was regarding my own realm. Mm-hmm. So I've learned to let go of some of that. It's not easy. It's just not easy at all. You know, and I have to have people to remind me, just be good to yourself, because if you're not, you're not going to be good for anybody.
Sure.
You know, they're not going to be able to rely on you.
I hope a lot of parents are listening to this program. I've had parents tell me, either on this program or I've had the person in recovery tell me, and I've heard parents say this in at our help program at Heartview, that they were in the process of planning their child's funeral.
Oh, I mean, sure.
They just saw that as inevitable. So,
you know, my husband said that when she was in the hospital that very first time, he goes, mm-hmm. "We need to prepare ourselves. She may die."
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's easy for him, but he's in that sort of situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where in the medical profession you think like you kind of have to think that way.
Scientific.
As a parent, that's sort of different. Okay.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, that's kind of in the back of your head because you know that's a possibility.
Yeah, it's tough stuff.
It is tough stuff.
Yeah. So
that's why you have to be good to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that your advice? What's your best advice to parents who are living, from day to day through this?
You have to do what you love to do to keep you on an even keel, whether it's, exercise, being in nature, writing, doing artwork, walking your dog, being with friends. You've got to do the things that make you feel like you. Just that self-care and gratitude for the things that are going well, And we all, addicts are often told that too. Being grateful is probably the best thing you can do for yourself, but it's hard for them to do that.
You said you journal and I keep a gratitude journal, and it's one of the things that I recommend and teach. And for me, I keep it simple. I'll put the date on the top. I like a spiral bound notebook.
Yeah.
And then I'll put like today's date, that it's Thursday, November, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the year, that's just the way I...
keep track.
Yeah, that's right. And then I have these journals going way back, and then I'll number the page from 1 until 10, 1, 2, 3, and number 1 is easy. It's always my recovery.
Sure.
And then and it's okay to write down some of the same things every day.
It's good to be grateful every day for those same things.
Family. Sometimes I write down dogs.
Yes.
Because I love dogs.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Or a coffee. Mm-hmm. Because
most definitely.
I think it's, especially when you start the day that way, it can make such a big difference.
Keep it simple and be present too is another thing. Keep it simple and be in today. Don't worry about, that's hard not to worry about.
That's right.
Even the next day or the next month, that's hard. But because we're such a goal-oriented society, it's sad. It's very sad because you lose something. And that's the analogy with painting. It's about the process, not the end product. It's about the daily living, not the goal down 5 years from now.
Yes, right.
It's just not that important. Because things change whether you like it or not.
Oh, they can change on a dime.
Yeah.
So when you're living with an addict, or raising an addict, and there's relapses, it's easy to feel frustrated. It's easy to want to yell, scream, even belittle the person. I mean, say, "Well." So how do you keep on loving? I guess that's the big, that's the question.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I just know that it's hard to put that into words. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I'm not going to say that it's not, it isn't her fault. I mean, this is a disease.
Right.
This is something that slowly took hold. Okay.
Yes, right.
And she had no idea. And still, she's only 25. And when you think about that...
Yeah, she's still so young.
She's still so young. She does not have the faculties to realize that, some things are temporary. Things are not permanent. And that's part of, this relapse, it's temporary. You're going to be okay, And so I have to think that way as well. This is temporary. She's going to be okay. All right? She's going to get through this.
Sure.
I will be there to support her in her recovery. I will not, if she's relapsed, I will not I still make mistakes, though. I'll still give her money for gas or something
right.
when she could be using it for drugs. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard. Because she will lie, because that's how they. Well, that's what they do to survive. Is they don't even realize that they're doing it necessarily, because it's just so.
Sure.
It's so automatic.
Definitely.
So I still make huge mistakes when it comes to that sort of thing. But you know, I try to think of it as a temporary situation, and it will get better. You know, and each time she does relapse, honestly. There's something that happens with each relapse. I mean, they're learning new things. It may be something small, but it's still things are getting better when you look at the bigger picture.
Hopefully, treatment is cumulative.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
And one of my favorite words of all time, as it relates to recovery, is wisdom.
I think that
here's what I say, and that is, now that we are in recovery. No matter how long we've been in recovery, it is now our responsibility to be on a lifelong quest for wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we take one step backwards, we might die.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be the last time.
Yeah.
So we have to keep searching for wisdom. We have to keep learning. And even if we do relapse, that never takes that wisdom away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you hear the expression, once you've been through treatment,
right?
or once you've been to, you know, an AA meeting, it takes all the fun out of it because you know, you know, even when you relapse, you know you're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know that you're taking a risk. You're doing wrong. You're not, and as they say in the recovery circles, well, I know I've got another drunk in me, but I'm not sure I have another recovery in me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's so true.
Oh yeah, yeah, I believe that.
Yeah,
I believe that.
And I thought of that many times. I know I've got another relapse or another drunk in me, but I'm not sure I have another recovery. It's too hard. Too hard to come back sometimes.
That is, and Mackenzie has said that to me on several. As a matter of fact, just this last relapse when she was an inpatient, she goes, "This is so hard. This is so hard." And that's why they do relapse again. It's because it's so hard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I hope you know that when and if she comes back to Bismarck, maybe she can be our guest.
Well, we talked about that too. She has her own blog that she writes. Yeah. And she's a very good writer. She gets it all out there. She's not afraid to say what's going on. That's the beauty there. She doesn't hide anything regarding her substance use and what's happened to her. And so, yeah, we've talked about that. I think she's proud that I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And I would like to bring her along so she can tell her story.
Sure.
You know, there's a whole nother connection there that can happen. I'm telling you.
She could be sitting right here with us. We could have a three.
Maybe
next time we can have a three-way conversation. So any other plans now for, you know, putting together
this
story of yours?
I'm just going to let the universe guide me here.
Okay.
You know, we'll see what happens. Already I haven't done much and things have happened.
Good.
So it was, it's meant to be, and we'll just... let it play out.
Well, it's so good to see you again. You know,
likewise.
I can't even figure out how many years it's been. Honest to God, it could be 12 years.
Since Marlo,
I should say that our daughter was one of your...
one of my students,
was one of your students.
Yeah, she's very creative.
Many years ago. Also want to say thanks. I'm so grateful for... this kind of public radio because we've talked for almost an hour and talk about being creative. I mean, we didn't know if we were going to talk for a half an hour but that's what's nice about and to have these very, very real and sometimes painful conversations I think is so important.
And
I hope that, and I'm so glad that these are also archived. These conversations as podcasts, and so people in recovery or people not in recovery can
listen whenever,
can go on to the website and listen to them. And let me put in a plug: we've done over 50 of these programs, and if if you would like to be a guest, anyone listening right now, to tell your recovery story, or even as a parent or loved one or a spouse, to come on the program and talk about addiction and recovery, please just call Radio Access. Or call Heartview. I'm the only, believe it or not, I'm the only Tom at Heartview. So, anything else you wanna add, Michelle?
Well, I think we've talked a lot. I mean, we could probably talk more, but I think we've said a lot of good things and kind of laid it out there.
I should have interjected a few times, but our guest is and has been Michelle Lindblom, and if that name sounds familiar, long time resident of Bismarck Mandan, and taught art and ran the department at Bismarck State College. So thank you
very much, Tom.
We'll have you back again.
Okay.
Say, we have a tradition of closing this program with the Serenity Prayer, so I will recite it. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.
I sing the song because I love the man. I know that some of you don't understand. Milk blood to keep from running out. I've seen the needle and the damage done. A little part of it in everyone. But every junkie's like a set in.